Henley Business School's Africa Connect alumni platform was launched in November 2019, and the opening event brought together some of the school's most prominent students and graduates. We found comedian John Flismus and asked him, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, who would you take on as a business partner, who would you employ, and which one would you kill?
So that's really easy. We all need to kill Elon Musk. I think he's the Antichrist. And his new cyber van can't even handle a hammer in the window. So that's the first thing. Hang on, that's wrong. Sorry. Yeah, I take that back. Let's kill Mark Zuckerberg. I think he's the Antichrist. Because the Antichrist is mild, right? He presents in chinos. Then I would work for George Bezos because he knows what he's doing. Whatever he does, he keeps making it bigger. I would start a business with Elon Musk because it's just for people who want to try a business for a while. It'll be really sexy. You'll do cool shit. You'll land rockets. You'll blow up cars. And then the next day the company will be gone. So you don't have to go to work on the like Wednesday.
This is Meet the Mind, the series that gives you insight into some of South Africa's most interesting thinkers. Brought to you by Henley Business School. Yes, indeed. So no pressure. We're going to meet the mind this morning. We're not just going to talk nonsense with him.
Man. He's going to change his mind, though.
Yeah. Well, he did in that question. All right, but there's some unconventional thinking and there's some unconventional questions because business is not the way that it's always been.
Yeah.
Business has changed. Doing an MBA is not what it was once was. And a lot of people think in MBA, you know, they're dime a dozen and there's so many business schools that offer them. I mean, you're not the obvious candidate for this.
No.
Despite the fact that you have been a very successful business owner and you've actually done quite a lot in business in terms of experience.
Yeah, I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't have any training.
Yeah.
And I realize that more and more as I meet people. They say, well, why are you doing this? Why don't you just go and carry on doing business? I don't think it's about that. I don't think it's particularly an MBA. It's learning. It's just learning, like learning how to learn. So the MBA is quite a good one because you do a lot of different subject matter in a very short space of time. So you have to, it's a very concentrated, for someone who barely got out of high school, how to prepare assignments and like do actual referencing. And then realizing when you go to Briars in this country, how incredibly unqualified most people are. Like, most opinions are rubbish.
and we realized this morning, there was a story Leanne was telling me about this art show at Art Basel in New York.
Right.
Where they sold a banana duct taped to a piece of paper, and it sold for hundreds of thousands of dollars to some French art collector.
Now, right.
Don't tell me that rich people are all clever or that you need to be very clever to get rich.
Yeah.
It's not true.
100%. I agree with you.
I've met some very, very smart people who are doing run-of-the-mill stuff.
Yeah.
And I've met some hugely wealthy people who are not necessarily smarter than any of us in the studio except Google.
Yeah. And oh. I think wealth makes you generationally more stupid because if you inherit it, you just automatically assume a lot of things about the world and most of them are wrong.
So how did you get involved with Henley, just so we can be clear about this?
So, I mean, ultimately years and years and years ago, I went to a lunch and like long ago, 10, 12 years, and the lunch was with John Foster Pedley, who's right. Now the Dean of Henley. And John and I just connected in a way that suddenly I found this kind of academic who wasn't an academic. He was an unacademic.
Right.
And he almost like, I could watch him kind of watching me across the table as if like, here's a project. This guy like seems to be interested in learning, but not interested. Like it was the weirdest, like I changed my mind, right? So he, in a very subtle way, got me interested in learning by just being very, very cool to me about like challenging me on an academic basis. And it was a long-term project because he basically said, I want you to come to Cape Town and talk to my students at the GBS, MBA students who were doing stuff. So what happened then was one of the days, I didn't know this, but somebody in the audience, one of the students at one of my talks was doing an MBA and then would go on to do her PhD. And she now heads up the School of sort of Innovation and Creativity for Entrepreneurs at Henley.
Wow.
Puling, who's become another mentor to me. And we are diametrically opposed. I mean, she's a deeply charismatically religious woman. Mm-hmm. And I am not.
You're the other one.
I don't want to like, I just don't identify as that, right? So For now. Yeah, I could change. We don't know. And I may end up marrying Jeff Bezos. We don't know. And so.
As a deeply charismatic,
do you know what I mean?
Religious woman.
I could bring him God. And so it just became this thing where, and what's happened over the years is I now not only study at Henny, but I'm teaching there.
It's amazing.
So it's become this kind of hub for, I almost want to say that there's a place for weirdos in the business world, and it's at Henley.
Just a place. I think everybody in the business world is looking for weirdos. They're looking for, these buzzwords of creativity and diversity of talent and skills and street smarts and all of the, people throw this lingo around.
Yes.
But in reality, there are very few who actually break the mold and are able to teach others.
Very few.
It's interesting to me, too, just from the point of view that, I've known you were smart long before you did an MBA. And I think a lot of people know that because I've always regarded most comedians as being particularly smart people. They observe. They're very, very sharp. They then translate their observations into real-world commentary.
Right.
Which sometimes has a shelf life that's absolutely extraordinary. I mean, like it outlasts movies
that are
iconic and that kind of thing. But you and I have spoken about intelligence before because I think it's something that interests both of us.
Yeah.
How do you measure it? What are you actually looking for? What makes a person useful and intelligent?
Yeah.
And how much intelligence is about what you learn and how much of it is about how you learn?
Yes.
And this is what I'm curious about this morning and why we wanted to talk to you today especially. Because, it's never – like I said, we don't need an excuse to get you in here. But when you watch some of the people who are studying at Henley, for example, or just smart people you've met.
Right.
How do you think how they think matters in relation to what they know? Because what you know is something anybody could pick up. Now, Google's available everywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not hard to find the material.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately what I've – so there are a couple of things. The one is that I think I'm attracted – I gravitate towards people who appreciate complexity as opposed to trying to oversimplify everything because, there are quadrants of people when you become a customer, you eat simplicity. Like that's what you do, right? That's your kind of job is to be highly opinionated, very lazy, and just consume because that's what markets like to feed you is to find out your opinion and then just give you what you want without you having to leave the couch.
And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because once you get into that system, you start believing your own bullshit as well.
Absolutely, exactly. So you form these heuristics, and then you find these sort of like mobs that you join, and so there are those people. And whether it's my own life, like sort of eating properly, exercising, which I hate, but I do it.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a regimen that keeps you kind of it's reflected in the way that you use your brain. So I find the people who appreciate complexity, those who are not polarized. Those who like to understand that there are many, many, constant values that may differ that are equally valid at the same time. And so if you talk to the maverick journalists or you hang out with, you do this really well. And I think it's your appreciation for what, perhaps we call intelligence. But it's complexity because we're ultimately just apes and we're really good at patterns. That's if you boil it right down. Yeah. So some apes are better at patterns, and what we do is we look at lots of patterns and we distill it into a simpler pattern for people to understand. I think that's what good teaching is.
Well, this is interesting too because I heard the best explanation the other day for why the market, the free market, is actually the greatest invention in human history.
Right.
The free market and anyone who's involved in business or studying business or anything to do with business, anyone who wants to make money and who doesn't, frankly.
Yeah.
Those people need to acknowledge that the free market is a machine that everybody is unconsciously contributing to determine the price of things.
Yeah.
And if you've got – how many people are there now on Earth? 7 billion or 8 billion?
No, over 7,
It's over 7 billion people who are, without even being aware of it, contributing to that free market. It's been going for years. It went before the internet. It was already working.
Sure.
If you look at an article that you buy on a shelf in a shop,
right.
You go, this thing's worth 5 rand, but I'm only prepared to pay 3 rand for it.
Yes.
They're going to have to at some point drop the price if enough people say 5 rand's too expensive.
Yeah.
And it finds its own level. And no government coercion is necessary or Soviet Politburo commissions who have to determine what the price of an apple is.
Yes.
And they did.
They can try.
But they used to have this, right? Yeah. They actually used to have committees that would say the price of wheat is X. The price of a Raspberry Pi is X. They had to decide this stuff.
The price of a banana duct taped to a paper is
$120,000.
Like, the market will allow for aberrations, but it will mostly keep everything within a certain band. Otherwise, the stuff won't sell.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible machine.
Yeah, and so even the art world is governed by a very small group of irrational human beings. That's what art collectors are. They are way too passionate about what they collect for it to be real. So this is why art is it's exactly the same thing.
And when you talk about people being patent-seeking apes, which is what we are, sometimes those patterns are not easily decipherable.
Absolutely.
And then we sit there and we go, ugh! Because we don't understand. And a lot of politics and a lot of what we see on the internet now, thanks to this massive research business that everybody is a part of, you can go online and you can ask a question and you can get pilloried or you can get threatened or you can get hate speeched or whatever it is.
Yes.
We can suddenly tap into the general irrationality of humanity. Or, if you're lucky, hit a strain of real gold where people can help you figure something out.
Yeah, you can actually tap into like a collective intelligence, which is fantastic.
And that was never really available before, not to the ordinary man on the street.
Well, this is why old people are not my favorite, because they didn't have all the tools. And, you know, I had this conversation with my mum last night, actually. She's 73 and is insisting that the past is better. And so many, like, so much data will tell you that if you, like, for example, if you say that you're all about family values, which were better in the old days, okay, that's a lie. You were actually for a generation that was harder on young people, died sooner, they were awful.
Well, it wasn't called rape just because it was marriage.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, let's be fair about this.
Bingo.
You think men behave badly today? You have no idea. Like in the Middle Ages?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, so don't tell me about the old days. They were awful.
Good Christian values. Once upon a time in your imagination.
Apartheid. End of conversation. Thank you.
Yeah. Slavery. Let's keep looking. I heard the most interesting thing the other day, which comes from a UN, and the UN is not the most left of center. I mean, the most right of center organization you'll ever encounter. They discovered, upon mining the data, which is someone else's buzzword.
Right, of course, yeah.
Mine that data, big data. So they've been looking at all the results of various surveys conducted all over the world. And the UN is quite good and methodical about this stuff. You know that world poverty was halved between 2000 and 2012? Halved.
Yeah.
World poverty was halved.
Yes.
They reckon that the chances are by 2030 there will be no one living below today's minimum wage by 2030.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that doesn't mean everybody's going to be hugely successful and there's going to be an enormous glut of everything. That
yes, everyone will be at the mall together. No. Yeah.
But there will be a general reduction in the misery of abject poverty. And to a degree that humanity just could never have predicted. We always thought that the cake was only so big and that there were more and more people, so we would all get less and less of it. Turns out that abundance is actually something we can make.
Yeah.
And abundance is something which is attainable. And somehow, this is all coming through now in the numbers.
Yeah.
There's a tremendously... I mean, you could be happy about being alive now, or you could be ecstatic. Anything less is actually just ungrateful.
100%. I don't know if you've read Hans Rosling's book, Factfulness.
No, tell me more.
It's all of the latest data.
Right.
And it changes the conversation at the Briar. I can't go to Briars anymore because all of the assumptions are wrong. You know, the rich are getting rich, therefore the poor must be getting poorer. Well, that's a stupid thing to say. They're not necessarily linked. Yes, there are a small number of rich people who are very, very rich. I understand that. But the poor, as you've just said, are no longer as poor as they were.
But it's usually people, and correct me if I'm wrong, usually people who are just resentful and bitter that they're not as rich as the rich people who talk about how wealth is a problem.
Yes.
Wealth, what it does, and people have to remember this too, this is about business. Someone will invent a product, and you remember those big TVs?
Yes.
Remember those ones that took up, like, some people would buy them. They were thick, first of all.
Yes,
it was almost like a projector from behind.
It was a rear projection TV.
Right, but they were huge. They were really, really enormous.
It gave your family leukemia as they watched them. Yeah.
But they cost hundreds of thousands of rands.
Yes.
And there were people rich enough to buy them.
Yep.
And enough of those people bought them for the manufacturers to work out a better kind of technology, sell those things profitably, make enough money, put it back into research and development.
Thin it down.
And come out with those thin screen TVs that now look like a picture frame on your wall and give you much better quality pictures. Now, if the rich people of the 1980s and 90s who bought those shitty things,
yes,
hadn't spent those hundreds of thousands of rands, we wouldn't have been able to develop the newer kinds of TVs, which we can, yes, all afford now.
We all enjoy, even the ones that wrap towards you now.
And on Black Fridays, I mean, look at how everybody, even poor people, go and buy, yeah, these TVs.
Yeah, you can elbow someone in the face and get your own one. I mean,
you've got to get one for New Year so you can throw it out the window.
But this is the marvel of modern technology, of the market, the free market, and the fact that rich people do us all a lot of good, yeah, by pissing away their money first.
Absolutely. Blow it. Yeah. High margins.
Yeah.
R&D. I mean,
and God knows the smart drugs they aren't going to figure out based on really, really dumb rich people needing to stay smart or to get smarter.
Or stay alive longer.
Do you do any supplements or any of that stuff? You just said just now to keep your brain going, you need to do exercise even though you hate it.
Yes.
You need to eat right.
Yeah.
But do you do anything else?
No, not really. I've read like quite a lot of Ben Goldacre. He's a great doctor who writes from the UK about, you know, the real truth about stuff. And the truth is there are very few clinical trials on any of these things. It's a very big market called nutraceuticals.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant because it means you can sell people stuff without any certification. It's like a dietitian. They have no qualification whatsoever.
I know people who do you know, these supposed smart drugs, and some, right, of them are just because they have ADHD.
Do you mean like Adderall? Or
Adderall, I mean things like Concerta, Modafinil, right, Adderall, what's the other one? Provigil.
Is Lyrica one? I don't know if
I don't know about Lyrica, but okay. I'm paying attention to this stuff because,
right,
there might be Ritalin, something in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just so terrified that I might be dumber than I could. I might be smarter than I could be if I just discovered some,
yeah,
unbelievable material, right, or I read something that changed my outlook. Or
yeah,
you,
I mean,
you don't do.
I know that they're all quite stimulants. I mean, I did try cocaine for a very long time.
For a long time.
Yeah, I did, and it was really unsuccessful. I thought I was doing really well. Like, I thought my conversation was blistering. I thought it was genius.
And it didn't addle you.
No, well, you know, I just. It really, I think Bill Cosby, controversially, was once quoted as saying, you know, why do you take cocaine? Is it, well, it amplifies my personality. And he's like, well, what happens if you're an asshole? You know,
That's exactly right. Did you find it was difficult to just leave that sort of life behind?
Yeah. Look, it did take quite a long stay in a very special hotel with fairly specialized security.
cost a lot of money too.
Yeah, but I'm glad I went through it, and I think it was a fire that was quite tempering. It's quite a good. I think it was Blake who said that excess leads to wisdom. It's a brilliant thing to be a junkie because you become a master planner and you develop fairly serious resilience. Mm. And but you also see the world. I mean, I met a lot of really famous executives in the underbelly. You know, and just because I didn't have chinos.
Well, in cities like New York, they say the entire economy is actually powered by people on Adderall and,
right,
cocaine and all these
it
things.
It seems to be, I mean, that's the future, is the sort of synthesis of human and chemical. I don't know.
If we can find a way for it to first do no harm, then maybe.
That'll be amazing.
I was actually diagnosed with ADHD.
Oh, I thought diagnosed with cocaine.
I was going to say, who's your doctor?
I've got a 6-month repeat prescription. and I was put on Concerta, and I lasted a week. The anxiety that it created was immense. Someone breathe, I wanted to punch their face in.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was extreme.
Aggressive.
Yeah.
So aggressive.
I don't know how people actually survive on it for such
long periods. Did I know you at
periods.
That time?
No, it was very recently.
Well, I did know you, but we
so
weren't.
You were known. You weren't assaulted, were you, at any point?
No. You've known me all along.
She stayed away from me. Lucky me.
But it was literally a week. It was while my mum was in hospital.
Okay.
And
that may not have had anything to do with your feeling otherwise, perhaps.
It all added together. But I don't know how people survive on this stuff for years.
We're going down another path here, and we can maybe pick this up later. But, John, before we run out of time, the performing John Flismus,
yes,
is still a thing. You still occasionally will do this, but it's almost as if you've evolved into another kind of creature. You know, it used to be your whole life,
yeah,
to be up on stage making people laugh, doing these really edgy things. It's interesting that in some ways this is a John Flismus that the old one would have hated.
Yeah, 100%.
And so maybe now the new John Flismus looks down on the old one.
Yeah, in fact, I do. I feel a bit. I feel like my previous work was very destructive, and because ultimately what happens is, back to my thing that people are stupid. I really mean that, and I it's not a judgment call. It's like it's a call to, like, come on, dudes, you've got privilege, you've got access to info. Why are you still saying the same old rubbish? And I think comics do that. You know, we tend to find the lowest common denominator and we play to that. And I've got old YouTube clips of my own that I'm really ashamed of, actually. It's just nothing more than like racial stereotypes dressed up as jokes. So I guess I do look down a little bit on it, but again, it was good training for where I want to go now. And I mean, I did lots of good stuff, I mean, I think. But for me, I'm a bit of an extremist. I have to switch off that tap before I can really commit to this. So you won't find me in a comedy club. I won't do a corporate booking for comedy. I won't. I've left the management company. I've sold my shares in that. Like, I've literally switched off that tap.
It's amazing. A lot of people would have said, but that's a great income stream.
If you're doing it, really is.
Shut down that income stream. What an idiot you are.
Yeah, exactly. So I have a new... I have a new set of stuff which actually launched today, my website went live today. So johnblissmus.com is finally up and running.
All right.
Look. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff there which is really cool, and I have already started doing stuff. I teach a lot at Henley. I'm there quite often. In fact, I'm going there now to do a workshop for my next subject.
I think you are excited by being around really, really smart people, and it's almost like you get access to your own personalized university here. You get to meet the people who are talking about the things you're most interested in, and you get to spend time with them, and you get to relay those impressive thoughts onto other young, inquiring, curious minds.
Yeah.
And that turns you on way more than getting applause.
Yeah, it's literally a campus where I can, you know, I can.
Brilliant.
Things can happen. And
this is fantastic. I feel sorry for the other comedians. Not that I've grouped you with them, but
sure.
Socrates, this is a it's maybe apocryphal, who knows, but Socrates used to leave his lectures if they applauded. He used to actually walk out because he considered that at that point their reptile brain had kicked in and they were enjoying it too much instead of thinking.
Yeah, I always had that line. If you clap, I'm leaving because I will not be approved of. I don't want your approval.
That's a tremendous position to take from... So far away, the start of any comic's career, when your purpose is to get the laughter.
100%.
And then towards the end where you actually eschew it.
Yeah.
You don't want it.
No, I don't want it. Like, learn. I mean, the lectures can be funny. I have a lot of, comedy in the lectures. But I have to get to a point in the day.
You're a funny guy. You're not going to be able to switch that off.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a cool human, sure. Why would you live without humor? Yeah. But I use that quite a lot. So I work with a lot of executives. And it was funny. The other day, I worked with a group of 10 people. And within about 12 minutes, six of them were crying. And so I was like, wow.
What did you do?
This really has – well, the truth is, it's a lot easier to make bankers cry today than it is to make them laugh.
Did you at any stage – and this is a difficult thing to admit maybe, but I've felt like this. Did you ever have an imposter syndrome where you were
all
sitting in a lecture hall and you were like, what the hell am I doing talking about this?
Dude, I have it all the time. And my last show in Cape Town at the Grand West Arena as a comic after 25 years, I had the same twinge as I walked on stage going – I think I've been bullshitting everyone.
That's
so
amazing.
So multiply that by 10 with this new path, because I was in Germany doing a masterclass for a bunch of people in Munich and with Henley Global, and I had the guy cleaning up the venue, like he was doing the cups and putting out the chairs, had a PhD. I'm still finishing my MBA, so I still have a way to go before I get to a DBA, and I felt so like I shouldn't be here, and yet. I had a lecture spot in this 2-day period. I hosted it, but I had a lecture spot, and just before me there was a guy from a robotics company in somewhere really sexy in San Francisco or something, and I thought, like, I have nothing to offer here.
That's
anyway,
so bizarre, because people like me look at you and we see you so comfortable on stage, you're so good at dealing with an audience, whether it's in intelligent ways or in funny ways or both, and I would imagine you go up there with the best feeling in the world. You're like, I'm gonna wipe the floor with these business fuckers. And yet here it is, like, you're admitting there's this imposter syndrome that comes in. What do you talk to people about? Because you've been in Singapore, you've been in Germany, you've been all over the world doing this stuff. It must be very fulfilling, but What exactly is it you're telling people?
So we look at what's happening in that business region, and we sort of Barry Fonseil and I do this. So Barry's, I mean, you know, was one of the country's best drummers, but he finished his MBA.
Barry used to be in Johnny Clegg's band.
That's correct. Yeah. So Barry's got a job now developing new business for Henley globally, and
it's amazing.
So we look at what's going on in that region.
These creative people who are going into business. Yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of survey that region, and we find out what they want to talk about. So in Munich, it was all about. The general theme for us is always championing humanity. So whatever technology is going on, we look at the human aspect, and that's kind of, we want to enhance humans so that when they get into the sort of integrated with technology, that we bring the very best of human thinking into the kind of machine learning. So in Germany, it was called augmented leadership. So we spoke about how you would be a better leader with tech rather than against it, or, you know, as opposed to it. When we were in Nigeria, we spoke about the side hustle, because that's a very real thing in a lot of employment situations. We're going to Trinidad in, I think, February. There we're talking about distributed leadership. So it's, you know, how you break up leadership into various pieces, and then you allow your team and technology to kind of run this platform of leadership. So, and there's, you know, you run a feedback loop so that the machine learning is improving the human leadership qualities all the time. So it just depends on what the need of the, let's call it, the client country is.
And for you, then, it's also good because it's constantly stimulating, and you're not going to get bored doing the same course. Again.
Well, you know, I'm sure you've seen millions of business speakers who just download stuff from the internet and they slash together a deck and then kind of present the same crap for a long time.
Horrible.
It's often outdated. And with machine learning, you've really got to be updating all the time. Like, you've quoted some heuristics that most people don't even know about poor people. So we kind of try and feed that in all the time. You know, and then I do it here in the classroom. So I teach South African executives why most of what they believe is wrong, because they inherited it from old apes who didn't know.
And those patterns may be broken.
100%. Break patterns all the time.
Right. And I think that there's an appetite for really interesting aha moments that I'm sure your lectures would provide, because you're coming at it from somewhere that they don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just explaining to a South African man that if you took away his gender – like right now, would it affect his life? And you've destroyed him, but there's no change.
Yeah, that's the most bizarre thing.
It's such a simple concept, because then you can go into maleness, femaleness, you know, neutrality. You can go into blackness, whiteness, gayness, straightness. It doesn't matter. Any binary now becomes a fluid continuum. And just that makes you more intelligent. And you can get that done in a day, but they've got to be willing. But you've got to break down some. So that's why bankers cry.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that you're making bankers cry. That is a huge achievement.
Got to see that one, yeah.
No, I just love it.
That's getting one back for the good guys.
Exactly.
All right, well, it's terrific to actually to mine some really interesting information out of you for a change, instead of us just talking nonsense about what's going on in the world. But I'm sure that this is for a number of people who are looking for the next evolution in their own business, in their own career, in their own life. Keep learning, right?
Absolutely.
The mark of someone intelligent actually is how much they want to know, not how much they know.
That is exactly right.
Very nice. Good to see you. Good
Thanks
luck.
For having me,
the
guys.
The website is live, johnflismus.com. You can go and have a look at that, and you can get in to all of the stuff that John's been talking about here. There's also going to be a series of these for you to listen to, a podcast series on Henley Business School and some of the more interesting people that we've – and believe me, there are – a ton of them, but we've managed to find just a few who we think might open up your eyes and your mind to a world of learning that you may not have considered up to now. Meet the Mind, brought to you by Henley Business School, only on cliffcentral.com.